The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
A graphic novel, a TV show. Well, it's not TV, it's HBO. And will this thing succeed? And by how much, man? And some might cheer and some might scoff, because it's Damon Lindelof. But either way, we're off to watch some Watchmen. Watching Watchmen, talking Watchmen, analyzing Watchmen, and maybe arguing over Watchmen.
Who watched the Watchmen? We watched the Watchmen, because it's over, folks. It's all done with. This is the end, but nothing ever ends except for our podcast, which is going to be coming to an end shortly. I'm Alex.
Wow, dark start to the last podcast. This is Justin Tyler.
Hey, Pete here.
Sorry, we say last names as well now, Pete. I'm Alexander Zalbin.
Let's keep
Pete,
it.
Could you just give your full name, please?
Pete LePage.
Great. And social security number, just real quick, just lay that out there.
Rattle it off.
Hey, kiss my ass is my number.
I believe that. I believe you changed it with the government. Guys, I'm sorry I'm a little more formal, but this is the end of an era. So excuse me for being a real person.
Yeah, well, whatever, man. Just because you're wearing a suit doesn't make you better than us, all right?
Not enough people dress up for podcasts, and it's time we all started as a group.
Yeah, and I just want to say that just because we're recording this over video on Skype, just because I have a close-up of my peen right now doesn't mean that I'm trying to intimidate you guys.
No. Wait, what did you say? A close-up of your what?
Peen.
Peen. Okay.
Peen.
What are you should have such a nickname basis for your penis.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, you know, it's like Dr. Peen Hatton. You know what I'm talking
yes.
about.
Yes. No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
We are talking about the final episode of the first and so far only season of Watchmen on HBO. See How They Fly. Now, we're going to get into a recap of what happened so far. We're, of course, going to talk a lot about this episode. And I will mention we're going to hold off, I think, on any season two speculation, because we are going to do one more bonus podcast that will roll out in the Watchmen Watch feed.
The last bonus.
Because we got more Pedopedia. We got to get into the Pedopedia.
We got the Pedopedia. We got the official podcast. We probably got a couple of interviews that are going to go on, other things. So we're going to hold off on that. But so much to talk about in this episode. But before we get into that, I wanted to hear from you, Justin Tyler and Pete LePage.
Yes.
What were your overall impressions of the series? I think this is the big question going on here. Could they stick the landing? I think, you know, certainly there's a lot to talk about, but I think they stuck the landing for this last episode. I'm very happy with how this ended up. How did you feel?
Yeah, I agree. Like, all of the threads came together, which was, at the end of last episode, felt like a big task. And it was also really emotionally satisfying. Like, I'm going to be honest, I teared up. I cried a little
cried.
Bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it the close-up of the peen? Was that it?
Yes, I was like, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Can we not talk about the dick for one episode, for Christ's sake?
I'm ready for my peen close-up, Mr. DeVille.
No, when I first read Watchmen as a kid, I was like, wow, that's the first time I've seen a penis. And that was very impressive to me. And that's kind of the main thing that I wanted out of the series. So I'm happy.
Yeah, and you work hard to make sure that yours is identical to Dr. Manhattan's in every way.
Every morning I wake it up and paint it with blue paint.
You wake it up? Oh, wow. A little sip of coffee? A cigarette?
I have two separate alarms. Wow. One's a little lower. I have a second.
One you wear
table.
Around your waist?
Yeah, one in my waist.
I bet the peen snoozing again. Lazy old peen.
You'll be late for work. Come on, peen. Get it together.
Pete LePage, what did you think of this episode? What did you think about the series as a whole?
I was really impressed. I mean, they took some big swings, which I wanted out of a Watchmen TV show. Like the graphic novel did, really did stuff. So I was really impressed with the powerful stuff they chose to talk about and the way they conveyed it. Yeah, really impressive. I mean, that last thing at the end made me a little angry. But I think that, I don't know, I was just, it was a hell of a show, very smart, very artistic, just, I was very, very impressed.
We'll talk about the last shot, obviously, in a little while, but let's talk about what's happened so far on Watchmen. I was thinking about actually getting into this recap before we were taping the podcast. And the thing that I think is kind of fascinating about the show is, given how complex it is, given how many things are going on, it's a relatively simple, straightforward story with a lot of other things going on the side. And I think that's what's made it so appealing, that there's not really necessarily a wall to getting in. You can jump in, you can understand what's going on, and then you can pick apart things like, why is there a squid rain? Why are they talking about the Tulsa Massacre? All of these things. It gives you time to do that. So with that out of the way, most of the action of the show takes place in Tulsa, Oklahoma, focusing on a cop named Angela Abar. Angela Abar was attacked in 2016 as part of an event called the White Night that was orchestrated by a racist group called the 7th Cavalry. 7th Cavalry shot up a bunch of cops. They killed a bunch of their family, but her and the chief of police, he wasn't at the time the chief of police, but he was about to become the chief of police, Judd Crawford, were left alive. They struck up a friendship. And as a result of this White Night, the police in Tulsa, Oklahoma started wearing masks and running around looking like masked vigilantes. Angela Abar took on the identity of Sister Night, which we later found out was a 70s blaxploitation film that she was aping a little bit. And there have been other characters like Red Scare, Pirate Jenny are sort of on the fringes there. A main character that we've been missing for a couple of episodes is Wade, a.k.a. Looking Glass. He wore a reflective surface on his face. He is able to see the truth in people, whether that is psychic abilities or not. We've certainly debated that a lot on the podcast. But he disappeared a couple of episodes back when he found out a big truth about the world, specifically the truth that was originally revealed in Watchmen, the comic book, that a man named Adrian Veidt, back in 1985, had released a gigantic interstellar squid on Times Square, killing 3 million people. Now, it wasn't actually interstellar. It was something he had created to try to stave off nuclear annihilation. Tensions had risen to unimaginable heights between Russia and the United States in particular, and that had ended up killing 3 million people, letting out a psychic blast that informed people that interstellar invaders were coming. And for a little while, at least, it united the world against these invaders instead of against each other. To keep things going, as we found out or surmised in the background, Adrian Veidt kept dropping a squid rain throughout the world to make people think that the interstellar invaders are coming. But over the intervening 30 years, not a lot has changed. Adrian Veidt ended up losing his fortune to a new trillionaire and new smartest lady in the world named Lady True, who has now come to Tulsa, Oklahoma herself. She has set up a base there and is building a device called the Millennium Clock that this episode we very much find out exactly what it does. But she has mentioned that, oh, it's just telling time. That's it.
It's just a clock. What's the big deal?
And as we find out this episode, it's just a clock. That's it.
It's just a clock. Relax, guys. It's just a clock. Sometimes a clock's a clock. One quick thing. Do you think in this timeline, Prince's song Purple Rain was actually Squid Rain?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Or Squid Rain? So it matches.
Squid Rain.
Squid Rain.
Yes, Pete? Did you want to sing with us?
Please leave Prince out of this. You guys, come on.
Prince is a part of this.
Listen, there are no sacred cows when it comes to Watchmen.
Don't interrupt the goddamn recap, Justin. It takes long enough to get through already, all right?
Jesus Christ. All I'm saying, I've already explained that it's very simple and spent the last 5 minutes talking about 1% of what's going on. So don't even worry about it, Pete. Yeah, Squid's right. So what were we talking about? Lady True. Now, Lady True also distributed a drug called Nostalgia. The drug Nostalgia allowed people ostensibly with dementia to relive their memories. Unfortunately, it was a big failure. However, Angela's grandfather, Will Reeves, who was the first character we saw in the show, he was just a kid when the Tulsa Massacre happened in Oklahoma, when a bunch of Ku Klux Klan members attacked a bunch of black folks on Black Wall Street back in the day in an absolutely horrific manner. He escaped from that and eventually became a hero named Hooded Justice. Put on the cape, was the first masked vigilante, sparked the whole trend, and in the meantime discovered a massive conspiracy that was tied to the Ku Klux Klan, eventually led to the 7th Cavalry that is called Cyclops. Essentially, all the racists are Cyclops. That's kind of what you need to know about that. And they have certainly made their base in Tulsa, Oklahoma. As we found out in previous episodes, one of their big proponents is a guy named Senator Keene Jr., Joe Keene Jr. And no, I'm not joking about that.
Wow. Oh, my God. Good.
Woo!
Good.
Don't interrupt your own recap. You're just stretching it out because it's the last one. Come on, man. Let's go.
Come on.
Squid rain.
Joe Keene originally was using Cyclops to run for the presidency and essentially take back the presidency for the white man. But then he found out a little piece of information. The little piece of information that he found out is that Dr. Manhattan, the most powerful superhero in the world, really the only superhero in the world, is not on Mars as people expected. He's actually in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, this is a big secret that Angela Abar has been keeping because he has been masquerading as a human named Cal Abar, her husband. He is, in fact, Dr. Manhattan. They met in Vietnam. They fell in love. And at the end of the last episode, the 7th Cavalry put into motion the second part of their plan, which is to force teleport Dr. Manhattan to an abandoned ball and then steal his powers so that the white man can become the blue man. Now, we mentioned Will Reeves earlier, the Nostalgia. I skipped past that a little bit because we got that amazing Joe Keene joke. I don't know who said that, but it was a very good joke.
Yes.
You don't know who said it.
We will cut it out in post, but really good stuff.
Stop fucking milking the recap, you asshole. Let's go.
Pete, this is all I got. This is the only thing I got. Will Reeves had a bottle of his own Nostalgia, his pills. He gave those to Angela. Angela consumed all of them, relived all of his memories. So she understands his entire past. And then last episode, Lady True laid out her plan for Angela Abar. Turns out that Lady True was manipulating things, and she wants to kill Dr. Manhattan and steal his powers. So that's kind of the lay of the land. There's a lot of other things that you probably need to know, but I think let's do like 10 more minutes of recap, and then we can kind of get into it, right?
Life's just the ultimate recap. Thanks for the nostalgia pill, Alex, about this TV
show.
When
I was a boy, I grew up in a small town called Port Washington, New York. Now, Port Washington, New York was on Long Island. I can't believe Pete hasn't stopped me yet. He's just looking at me.
This
was
clear
Pete bait.
This better relate to your peen at some point here.
Oh, my God.
Pete Washington, that's what we called it back in the day.
Should we jump into this show?
Let's do it.
We start on Veidt's message that he recorded, and we see a little bit more of the operation at his base.
Well, hold on. There's one thing we start on that I do think is important to mention before even Veidt's message. The title screen is on a clapboard. It says Watchmen. It says, I believe, Season 1, Episode 9. It has the actual date, December 5th, 2019, on at the broadcast date of the episode. And to me, this is kind of where I fell in love with the finale, because
at the very first sight.
The reason is what we talked about going into this series, the big unknown for me with the series was, are they going to try to ape the comic book like how the movie did, sort of doing it beat for beat, or are they going to try to make it like a TV show? And ultimately what we started with in the very first episode is we started with a movie and then we pulled back to a movie theater. If you watched it on a big screen, like we talked about, you could see that they were playing with the frame rate. It looked almost like a film going by as it was happening. And throughout, they've had the American Hero story that is riffed off to TV. They had so many things that have made it clear that what they're talking about here is, yes, they're riffing off of comic books, but they've moved it on to talk about TV, movies, media, the news, etc. And what this shot throughout there is, that's what this episode is about. That's what the show is about. That clapboard made it very clear to the very end that they are making this about a comment on superhero movies and TV. And I thought that was such a smart way of driving that home in such a simple shot.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It was very cool. Nice little, and then a little meta and sort of a, like, yeah, I know you've been waiting for this, and action. I thought that was a, both those things I thought were very cool. Another cool thing I thought was cool was we get a little Ozymandias action figure collection on mm-hmm. Veidt's desk, mm-hmm. Which was very fun in relation to the comic. And just a lot of this episode, I think, was about Veidt's vanity and really poking holes in that. And this is a good start to that, I thought.
Also, when he, you know, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but when he gets like goldened, he kind of turns into an action figure. So,
yes, he had Lady True has him take on an action figure pose.
Yeah.
And I think it's showing how easily manipulated, quote unquote, superheroes are, which is what so much of the plan is. And then somehow they win in the end. Which,
I think you're absolutely right about poking holes in the myth of Veidt. And I thought Jeremy Irons was so funny this episode.
Yeah, really good.
But they set that up very simply at the beginning where they have all of these Vietnamese servants, yeah, set up in Kardak. It is our Antarctica supervillain slash superhero stronghold. He's doing the speech for Robert Redford, and in the middle, the guy coughs. And that, to me, was the immediate cue that, like, nope, he is going to get skewered this entire hour, and he absolutely did. It was fantastic.
So good. And so this next bit of where the woman who we later find out is the original Bean breaks into his office and finds his store of sperm that he has.
Right.
And we later find out that Ozymandias has never had sex because he wants to stay pure, like Alexander the Great did. So the question is, what's his sperm plan? What's the old bank about, the old sperm bank?
Like, what is he saving it for?
Yeah.
I assume that, I don't know, given his vanity, like we were just talking about, I would say he probably, after his death, will say, "And I freely give my sperm to the world." And everybody would be like, "What the fuck are you doing, dude?"
Yeah. You know? Like he'd mail them to strangers?
Maybe.
Surprise.
I think maybe if he wanted to, like, clone himself or have a bunch of mini-me's running around or something like that, if it was part of an evil plan.
Or a good plan.
Yeah.
What's evil about having a safe full of your own sperm?
Yeah.
I ask for a friend. And I guess, do you have to keep that stuff cold?
Because
I messed up. If that's
true. Oh, you just have a nice warm pile going on?
Yeah, a warm pile?
Yeah, a nice warm pile.
That was too graphic, man.
Why do you have all those separate jars? You can just use one jar. Okay.
The toughest part is when you have it in a small ball jar and you have to move it to one of the larger ball jars.
Yeah, that's a pain. You don't want to, because you're going to spill.
Right.
Let's keep going.
It's a square container, but I call it a ball jar.
Yes, I know. Totally.
I was really hoping you wouldn't address that. Can we fucking move on?
So Bean impregnates herself with some of that precious Aussie sperm. Yeah. We jump forward to...
I could have done without the squirting sound effect, though. I could have done without
it. Spot on.
I love this whole scene. I love that she comes up silently. She types into the computer. The program that she runs to lift the Alexander portrait is Untie Knot, which goes back to a little bit of what we've touched on in the TV series, but it definitely goes back to the comic book series, where the whole thing with Adrian Veidt is the Gordian knot. That's the thing that they keep playing off with in his issue. So this goes back to that. Untie knot. She eventually reties knot. The password is Ramses II, which is the same password
he has.
I know. He uses the same password in his New York office that he uses there. And I love that. Again, in poking holes in the myth, that it just skewers that, like, he calls himself the smartest man in the world. He's kind of dumb.
Yes. Yep. I mean, he's a...
True's whole point, too.
Mm-hmm. In the comic, he calls himself... he says he's not some radio play villain.
And a Republic serial villain.
Yeah. Republic serial villain, yeah. And that's... He literally is that. This episode is like, he's a goofy villain, and he barely saves the day again and is embarrassing the entire time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't ever meet your heroes, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
My hero is Pete, so
yes.
I met him a long time ago.
Now, two things that I wrote down for the scene as well. One, Lady True is sample 2346. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that means anything necessarily. Certainly that seemed to be a specific number, or maybe it was just a random number that they threw out there. That was the whole point. Bjorn gives this speech where she says, "I want to ride the strong winds, crush the angry waves." I couldn't find any reference for that as well. That was very curious to me. So if there are any listeners out there who were able to identify that, very curious to hear what that was.
Zalman, I think as we all know, 2346 is the planetary nebula near the celestial equator. So, I mean, that's pretty obvious. I'm surprised you didn't get that.
Oh, okay. Wow. Thanks, Pete.
What are you talking about?
Just real quick, who gave
23 is half of 46.
who gave you access to Google again, Pete?
No way, Pete's not using Bing. He binged that. He binged that.
So after the scene with Bjorn, as you were saying, Justin, hey, we jump it. After the scene with Bing, which is her name now, we move ahead to the scene of Lady True coming up in a super sweet jacket, walking up to Kardak. It's very reminiscent to me of Night Owl's costume, his adorable little costume.
For a second, I thought that's what it was. I thought we were going to see a flashback to him, to Night Owl returning to have some information for Veidt. But it wasn't. It wasn't to be.
No, I really liked, though, this was a real window of how dumb Veidt is, because he's literally like, "I don't have time for fans." And then she's like, "Oh, but, you know, you're so smart and great." And then he lets her in. And it was kind of like...
Well, she plays him like a fiddle this entire time. First appealing to his vanity to get in there, talking him up, buttering up, talking about how amazing his plan was with the squids, how smart he was. She wants to meet the man that saved the world. And then there's a point, once she has him, once she's in there with the tea, where she just turns it, where she twists it and starts revealing things. Yes, Pete.
The line where she was like, "But you're just a man," was really powerful. I thought that was great.
Yeah, and I love that she says vials of cum. She just debases him. She's both buttering him up and also cutting him down at the same time. And you can tell in Jeremy Irons' performance that he's so surprised by this and charmed, and he's like meeting his match in a way that I think he appreciates.
Well, that's what he cops to later on, to jump ahead, where he... in the most gut-wrenching manner, ultimately tells the Game Warden, we actually didn't mention anything in the recap about what's been going on with Adrian Veidt. Real quick, he's been trapped on a moon of Jupiter, Europa, in an enclosure created by Dr. Manhattan, filled with clones called Crookshanks and Phillips. He has been imprisoned by a main Phillips named the Game Warden, who wears a mask. And ultimately, just to jump ahead, and we'll get back to the scene, but to your point, Justin, he tells the Game Warden that he's not a worthy adversary, and later on he says that Lady True is a worthy adversary, and I think that's exactly what he is getting at this point, is he's thrown, and he's never been thrown before. So, it's phenomenal. Hong Chau in the scene, who plays True, is so good.
So good, yeah.
Oh, and yeah.
She had, playing, she's playing herself at several, a couple different ages here, and it's great. You can see a little bit of the difference in performance, I feel like. And she's just such a great villain because she's like so confident in her plan. She like is like making fun of it as it's going along a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's great. She's a great escalation of what Vite was in the comic for the series, I think.
Yeah.
Especially in this episode. So, we see that she talks about the satellite that she sends into Europa to see, to watch Dr. Manhattan, which obviously becomes the big linchpin of Vite's plan.
Yeah.
To get back.
And now there's an interesting thing that happens this episode that I was initially a little iffy about, and I do want to talk more about at the end, but this is the one of the first episodes that has used one of my least favorite devices in TV, where you flash back to earlier episodes and see scenes, because that always, to me, feels like you're feeding the audience what's going on by connecting those dots rather than letting them just naturally remember what happened. So we do get an extrapolation of a scene here where we see Adrian had taken a bunch of dead bodies of Crookshanks and Phillips and spelled out "Save Me, D." So we get to see "Save Me, Daughter." And I appreciated that. But by the end of the episode, there's a lot of these moments where they are flashing back in time throughout the series. I have a theory about that I wanted to talk about at the end, so I'll put a pin to that. But it was interesting to me, again, that they did that this episode where they hadn't really done it previous episodes.
Well, what I liked about the reveal of that, and we can talk about what you're talking about later, but the Save Me D really meant we were meant to think it was Save Me Dr. Manhattan, mm-hmm, I think.
Right.
And now it's Save Me Daughter. I thought that was just a nice we thought it was Vite was debasing himself to Dr. Manhattan, his like worthy adversary, quote unquote. And instead it was Save Me Daughter, someone who he never thought was worthy of his time. And he has to, again, put him, take a knee in front of her to save his life, which I just thought was a good moment where you see that difference, that juxtaposition.
Ooh, yeah, I love that word. We should use that word more often on the podcast.
Definitely, definitely, but definitely.
I kind of think it was like, you know, he said he would never do it. And, you know, later it's kind of revealed that she is like him in the ego department. So him knowing that she couldn't resist that because he is kind of playing to her ego there by saying, "Save me, daughter," like really kind of tipping the scales of who's running shit. And acknowledging that, I thought was really good on his part.
And I think in the end, the reason Vite beats True and saves the day is because he knows what an egomaniac she is, so he's able to take advantage of that. So it's really, Vite doesn't win by being smart. He wins by understanding his weaknesses and the fact that True has the same ones.
Well, and I think that's, again, we're jumping all over the place here, but I think
we sure are.
It's like we're taking nostalgia pills.
Ooh, this is the point of why Vite was sent to Europa in terms of the structure of the show, is he doesn't totally learn his lesson, as we find out by the end, but he certainly needed to be debased quite a bit to get to the point where he can actually save the day, even if it's, you know, feeding his own ego. He doesn't grow completely. He doesn't turn over a new leaf, but he does change maybe 5-10%. And that's what we need to get Adrian to the point where he's at the end of the episode.
Yeah. And it made me the moment where we see the Save Me D be Save Me Daughter made me think, imagine the scene where Lady True is just watching her satellite feed and she's like, "Holy shit, my dad's on that planet. I guess I'll send a probe over there and gold him up and bring him back home."
Yeah. Classic daughter behavior. Someday I hope that my daughter does that for me.
Me too. That's why I have two daughters, because I want to make sure I got one who'll save me.
Real quick, Justin, which one is the backup daughter?
Oh, of course it's...
there's a couple of other things that happened in the scene that I wrote down that I thought were neat. Vite is pretty pissed off. This scene takes place in 2008. He's already sent his message to President Robert Redford and said, "I manipulated things so you became president, so let's work together to make the world a better place." Turns out Robert Redford said, "No, I could have become president anyway. That has nothing to do with you." And Vite says, "As if some cowboy actor could obtain the presidency." And that's a line straight out of... Yeah, it's straight out of Watchmen, the comic book, where there's actually a tricky little thing. We're supposed to think as readers they're talking about Ronald Reagan when they're actually talking about Robert Redford. And then the other one that I wanted to talk about... the other thing that I thought was kind of fascinating, and I feel like potentially deserves more exploration, is... True really turns the scene when she sees him dumping squids everywhere. He points out that the squids are kind of on a random path, so nobody can detect it. And she points out that Dr. Manhattan was doing the same thing as a way of skewering Veidt's intellect. But she said, "You had a genius idea 20 years ago, but you're doing the same thing, just smaller." Yeah. Now, that to me seemed a pointed commentary, not just on Adrian Veidt, but something else. And I think people are going to read a lot into it. Do you think they're talking about Alan Moore there? Do you think they're talking about comic books as a whole? What did you take away from it?
I don't think Alan Moore. I think because Alan Moore didn't really do that. He went on to do other stuff and is like, oh, I would never go back and do that again. I did it. So I think it's sort of maybe giving Alan Moore a little bit credit for not doing that. But otherwise, yeah, I think it's a comment perhaps more on the superhero entertainment industry just as a whole. Like, why aren't you telling more original stories? You're doing the same Spider-Man, but it's just like a smaller version of it, a more focused version of it. So I think that's the take.
Yeah, I was just – I think it was just more of just an insult to his intellect. I see what you mean. Looking at that now, it's a lot clearer, but I also think that like she's really toying with her food, playing with her food here. Like she's enjoying the fact that she has, this guy beat in her mind. So she's just really enjoying like the compliment, the backhand, so I think that's kind of why I took away.
The funny part of it as well is that ultimately her plan, at least in terms of execution and level of destruction, is kind of the same thing that he did, just smaller. So she owns herself in a certain way at the same time. The other thing that comes out in this scene is we find out that her plan is to destroy Dr. Manhattan, steal his power. She wants $42 billion from Adrian Veidt. He says he's going to give her nothing. So in the timeline, because they don't exactly lay this out, she goes ahead and destroys him financially, like I think in 2 years, if I have the timeline correct, to the point where we find him with Dr. Manhattan later on. Karnak is broken. His TVs aren't working. He's haggard. He's so upset by everything that he ultimately just wants to head off to Europa and be loved by Phillips and Crookshanks. So she's pretty successful pretty quickly. But overall, her plan, and this is something that I think plays out through the episode, is what is our relationship with God? Religion isn't something that necessarily has been overtly played with in the series, but I do think it gets played in this episode. And what True is ultimately asking is, why doesn't God fix everything? Mm-hmm. You know?
And why do we worship this God? We can take the mantle from this God.
Even Louis Gossett Jr. was like, he could have done more.
Right. Yeah. The interesting thing that I think the show does, the side that it falls on, and this plays out also in the Seventh Cavalry's plan, where they're saying, we can do it better. We can do it better than Dr. Manhattan. He's had, and Will Reeves says towards the end of the episode, he had all of this power, could have probably done more with it. That's how we often feel about God and religions, right? That people make excuses of, oh, it's all part of God's plan. This is all part of God's plan. But then there's a question of, why is there war? Why do people die? Why do babies die? Why do people commit suicide? What does any of this have to do with anything? Why doesn't God come down and fix things? And that is ultimately what Lady True is saying, what Joe Keane is saying, what even Will Reeves is intimating towards the end is, if we had God's powers, we could probably do a better job, right? But I think the show comes down on the side of Dr. Manhattan is who Dr. Manhattan is. That is how God is. The plan is the plan. Go with it, and things will happen badly. Things will happen well, and that's where we need to follow along.
It's more of like a Burger Time understanding of God.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Don't explain?
Yeah, don't explain.
I would need some explanation.
So, but burger time, like a one burger comes out and you deal with it within the game. And then another one comes out. But then all of a sudden, a lot more come out at once. Mm-hmm. And so God's there trying to get the burgers in the right place, and there's just too many.
I think, you know, that's kind of like what Jim Carrey realized when he was playing God, you know, is like there's a lot of prayers coming in, and it's hard to spend time and answer all of them.
That's another example of burger time, the burger time religion I'm starting.
Yeah. Both of these examples are great, and I don't know why anybody listens to this podcast.
You know, if you're going to start a burger time religion, I'm going to start a nostalgia pill company, because when I'm old, I want to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you, Pete, it's much easier to start a religion than invent a pill that brings memories.
We'll see who is successful. We'll see.
Okay, a lot of very stupid people have started religions, and I hope to join them.
Yeah. Just to contribute a little bit, I want to say I'm a little more of an Evan Almighty man myself than Bruce Almighty. But
wow,
you know,
bold. Cool.
Wow, way to have the worst take somehow.
let's jump ahead. Let's keep
going.
Going forward.
So we jump to Veit trapped on Europa. The ticking clock kicks in as Veit rejects her. Love that coming back. He uses the horseshoe to dig his. He has already used the horseshoe to dig his way out, proving that how invaluable that was.
Yeah.
In the most simple way
about the timeline. So, when we saw Veit in the last episode, where the game warden approaches him in the prison and he's reading Fog Dancing, that's year 7. The place that we pick up with him now, it's apparently taken, I guess, at least 2 years, maybe 3 years, for Lady True to build a rocket and send the rocket off to him on Europa. It lands there on the 8th anniversary of his landing on Europa, and then it takes him about a year to travel back. And in case it wasn't totally clear, because they don't 100% lay it out, but I do think it's pretty clear that the rocket is what fell on the Clark farm back a couple of episodes back when we first met Lady True. She bought the land there. He was encased in gold. And like we suspected, he has been encased in gold and sitting in her vivarium for the past several episodes before she ultimately unmelts him. So we can get back to the scene. I just wanted to make sure people understand that part.
Yeah, good timeline. But before we get to the gold statue, he escapes the prison. The game warden is there to stop him, shoots him. He catches the bullet.
Like
he does in the comic book, which I got to say, if you haven't read the comic, this must seem fucking crazy.
Yes. Is the thing that seems crazy?
Well, just highly specific out of nowhere thing where Veit can just catch a bullet. And then he uses the horseshoe to shoot him with his hand in the bullet. Crazy in the warden.
No, he just stabs him with it. He just stabs him with the horseshoe because the horseshoe got sharpened from cutting through all the stone and breaking out of
it. I see. Yeah. I thought it was even crazier that he shot him by
That would be crazy.
That's also not how bullets work. So we get a great line from the warden that masks make men true.
Cruel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, I couldn't hear it then.
Yeah.
Wow.
You were thrown by the horseshoe shooting the bullet that you didn't catch in the dialogue.
Yeah, wow, you took a...
What happened
there? Did your kid come in and distract you from watching, or what happened there?
No, it's hard to hear the feed when we watch this. But masks make men true, I thought, was such a better line.
Yeah, that's not what it is. What actually happens is that he stabs him. He's holding the final Phillips, who was the first Phillips ever to be made. It turns out that this was Veit's command, that Veit commanded him to become the game warden, to put on a mask so that he could have something to pass the time while he was on Europa, because he knew he would be there for several years. And the Phillips says, was I good master? Was I a worthy adversary? And Veit says, no, but you passed the time. And he asks him about why he wears the mask, why he made him do that. And he says, because masks make men cruel. And it's an interesting flip of the way that Laurie Blake looks at it. Laurie looks at masks as a way of hiding your trauma. We also didn't mention Lori Blake at all in any of the recap or anything like that.
We'll get there.
Don't even worry about it. But Lori thinks that masks hide your tragedy. Veidt thinks that you wear a mask because they allow you to be cruel. He did wear a mask as Ozymandias. And as a note, he's no longer wearing a mask this entire episode. So I think that also points to the 5-10% softening of Adrian Veidt that has happened over his time on Europa. And there's another interesting moment that I wasn't sure what to take away with, but as he walks off, there's a line of Phillips and Cruikshanks who are saying goodbye to him. They still love him after all of this. And he gets to the final Cruikshanks, and the Cruikshanks kisses him on the cheek, and he pauses and looks at her before he gets on the rocket ship. The Truant said, why do you think he pauses?
Well, I think it's a flashback to the moment he first saw the Lord and Lady having sex. And it was just like that little moment of like, oh,
that was
I remember.
Dr. Manhattan, though.
Huh?
That was Dr. Manhattan. Dr. Manhattan.
Am I having a mental breakdown?
I think he was just pausing because it's like he's finally leaving this place after 7 years. But I also wish if he was like 5-whatever% nicer, he could have just said to the guy, yeah, you're a worthy adversary. Just lie to him. Jesus, you know, like, it was complete dick to him the whole time.
He was a dick.
He's a clone.
Also, Justin, you got to calm down on those ball jars. That's all I'm saying.
I guess that takes up a lot of my time. Well, let me just say, masks make men true, what I thought it was. I thought it would have been a nice just opposite side of the hide your trauma, and then it sort of moves you beyond your trauma. Mm-hmm. But I guess that is never meant to be.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, stop trying to push this thing that didn't happen.
Hey, man, if you don't like this story, write your own.
Yeah, exactly,
wow.
Man.
That's the spirit.
Write your own Watchmen.
I do think it was just a moment of him. Maybe he had a bunch of weird relationships with these clones that we never saw. So he took a moment to be like, hey, we had a good run, didn't we?
I think it was pausing because he's not sure. He knows he's going back from a place where everybody loves him, even if he hated it, even if it wasn't intellectually challenging, to something that will be much more challenging, that he is going to have to face down Lady True and deal with that in some way. So I think there's a moment where he thinks, should I actually leave? And then ultimately he does get to the rocket ship. They encase him in gold. He's landed. He's been kept in the vivarium. And Lady True is taking him out so that he can see her turn on the Millennium Clock and fulfill her plan to kill Dr. Manhattan, steal his powers. Before she does, though, there's a great moment where she turns to Beyond and says, listen, there's something I need to tell you. He may say something when he wakes up. And she says, I'm your mother. She's already figured it out. And this is the first time, like Adrian Veidt being thrown, where we see Lady True be thrown in the episode. There's certainly a parallel there where her plans keep getting messed up and she gets more and more petulant over the course of the episode, which I thought was a fantastic performance choice. She's acting like a spoiled child the entire time. But then Adrian does get unmelted, or whatever you want to call it. Lady True gives him some water, and he says that he's been trapped on Europa. Dr. Manhattan sent him there, and she has another great line where she says, wow, there must be a cool story behind that. And
yeah.
I love giving her these colloquial phrases like come and cool and other little words that they throw in there, that she's this insanely rich, insanely smart person, but it makes her feeling like she's almost appropriate, like she's a kid at the same time.
Well, and also it's the counterposition of Ozymandias, who's like all this flowery language and like, here's another speech I'm going to give you. I'm going to quote some poetry. And she's like, cool, dude, let's see what you got. Tell me what
cool
happened.
Cool story, bro.
Exactly. And I think that's just another subversion of how the Republic serial villain would be.
Yeah. So he does get, does turn to Beyond, looks at her eyes and is like, you cloned your mother. And she says, I thought he would say something. So that's another fun moment. Then he gets dressed in more age appropriate clothes, which is a gray outfit. It still does have the Ozymandias eye on it, which is kind of like the eye of Cyclops. Now, there's a lot of different eyes that we see here, from the squid eye to the Cyclops eye to the eye of Ozymandias, that keep getting played throughout. I will mention, I didn't pick up on this at all. My wife mentioned this to me, that the O of Cyclops on the head is kind of the same thing, or the opposite thing, of Dr. Manhattan's hydrogen atom on his head. So that's another little connection riff on the same sort of thing. And I don't think it necessarily means more, other than it is this thematic visual connection throughout. But then we get another thematic connection that's played throughout. Yeah.
I just want to say, it kind of sounds like we have the wrong Zalbin on the podcast.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Bring us the other Zalbin.
Yeah.
The people are clamoring.
She's really got some great insight going on here, and missed some stuff that you clearly didn't even notice.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. She's vaguely British.
It's me, Alex's wife.
No, see, Alex, you're like the Ozymandias, and she's like the Lady True.
Oh, stop.
We need her. Yeah, we need her fresh take.
Yeah, we need some fresh takes.
That's, I don't want to tell you guys what is behind my painting of Alexander and the horrible, terrible, no good, very bad day, but it's pretty fucked up.
Well, the other famous Alexander leader.
Oh, boy. So he does get dressed, and we finally find out what the Millennium Clock is. Essentially, it's also a gigantic egg. That's what I was getting at, is the other theme that we've been playing throughout the series.
Yeah.
The egg cracks and opens, and a floating ball comes out. Ozymandias.
The yolk.
The yolk. And Ozymandias, this is the point when they head into the square, into Town Square, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the newsstand, we get this great moment where we see the newsstand.
Yeah, the newsstand.
Of course, the newsstand is going to be the site of the disaster, just like the comic book. I love that. But yeah, it's Veidt saying the end is nigh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, I looked this up on, I can't remember whether it was Quora or Yahoo Answers, which is my main go-to for searching for things. But he says, and Palestine has become a widow for Egypt, which is the Merneptah Stele. I'm definitely pronouncing that wrong, but it's exactly what Adrian Veidt says. It's sort of a precursor of the end of days. And yeah, they see the ball throating through Tulsa.
Wait, I just want to say, there was a fun line where she asked for her papers instead of, having her mom do it. And then the guy was like, it's nice to see you in the flesh. And she was like, this is the last time I'll be in it, which I thought was a crazy thing to say to somebody on the street, but also kind of really, she is very much like, I'm going to transition to being into a god, like has no questions about her plans not working.
I usually do that to people when they say it's nice to see you in the flesh. So pretty typical thing, I thought.
It's a great way to keep people interested in what you're doing. If you say last time you're going to see me in the flesh, they're like, hey, what's up with you, dude?
And there's another, not to keep complimenting Hong Chau, but there's another great reaction where he calls after her and he says, hey, nice hat. And she just turns and puts her hands on her heart and goes, aw.
That was very funny.
So funny. But then we cut over. I also want to mention, because this is the point where we start to get to other things in the episode, but it was such a ballsy move to have, I want to say, half an hour of the show where it's all about Adrian Veidt before we get to any of the other characters, basically.
Specifically the main characters.
Yes. Which is amazing. Yeah. I love that they took the time there. I love that there was so much more, but I cannot imagine the viewing experience from the viewing audience at home when this is broadcast. And I'm curious to see what the Twitter reaction was, where people being like, what happened to Wade? What happened to Angela? What happened to Laurie? Yep. What happened to Dr. Manhattan? What are you doing to me right now? Is this entire episode going to be Adrian Veidt? But then ultimately we do wrap around to that. So Justin, back to you.
And then we get into the main sort of main characters and all the crazy shit that they're dealing with in this moment. We go to the abandoned mall. The Cyclops plan is coming together. We had a random old white guy villain who we find out is the older Senator Keene.
Yeah.
Which was a fun, I love the way they made him just like, it's like an 80s movie villain where it's just like evil looking dude.
And it is kind of, I haven't really dug into in my head what it necessarily means that Senator Keen is also part of Cyclops, because as we found out from Watchmen, the comic book, Senator Keen Sr. Is the guy who outlawed mass vigilantes back in the day. So what it necessarily means that he is part of this racist organization, that everything he did probably was for Cyclops, I'm not 100% sure, but it's certainly dipping even harder into the context of the comic book, similar to how they repainted, recontextualized Hooded Justice a couple of episodes back and other things. But I do think in the greater sense, this little thing, yes, it does paint him as an 80s villain, but it also means that now that we are done with the TV show, that it's worth going back and reading through the comic again to see what this TV show has changed and what's it changed in terms of the context.
Totally.
I don't like that phrase, done with the TV show. Please don't say that again.
Nah.
No, done with TV. This was the last episode of TV. We're done after this point.
Yeah, we're going back to magazines.
Love it. Love a good time.
So we see Laurie, who in the recap you didn't say, but she was formerly Silk Spectre. She now works for the FBI and hunts down superheroes, basically. She used to date Dr. Manhattan, so some fucked up interactions coming your way in a sec.
Yeah.
So Laurie's there, and of course, Looking Glass is there, who she calls Mirror Guy, in one last dig.
Yeah, and he's like, it's Looking Glass.
Yeah, it's funny.
Love that.
And they teleport Dr. Manhattan in, as we saw at the end of last episode. We get Keen's villain speech full of alt-right talking points.
Well, we should also mention there's a fantastic reaction from Jean Smart when she first sees Dr. Manhattan. Yeah. She immediately realizes who he is. And there's several times in the episode where Jean Smart, in a very different way from Lady True, reverts almost to being a little girl again, the young Laurie. And this is one of those moments when she first sees Dr. Manhattan teleported in, where she looks at him and she says, John?
John,
and she's
yeah.
crying, and there's this soft, wide-eyed face that she has. It also happens later on when the chair falls down and Vite looks over her, where the way that they shoot her face, all of the lines have come out. She's younger again, almost. I thought that there had something crazy had happened where they had reverted her in age or something like that. And then towards the end of the episode, when they're at Kardak, and this is jumping ahead, but she turns to Vite and kind of very proudly says that she hunts mass vigilantes and works for the FBI. And he was part of the older generation. She, despite everything that happened, looked up to him as one of her elders. So we get this several times throughout. We've seen this badass comedian, Laurie Blake. But here we get to see Silk Spectre Laurie Blake. And I thought that was very cool because it all came out through Jean Smart's performance.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, it was great. I was a little disappointed Dr. Manhattan didn't acknowledge her at all.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get a scene between them, but we didn't. Yeah, and
you know, at least nod in her general direction, say what up, you know.
So as we find out, he is in a cage that is made of lithium batteries that have been made with Dr. Manhattan particles, essentially. So he is being, this is what they were doing in the first episode. This is the barrel of watch batteries that they were gathering, several barrels of watch batteries. They melted them down, made them into this cage, and he can't concentrate. So I get that it would have been nice to have that, but I appreciate that they waited for the only real conversation Dr. Manhattan has is the one with Angela right before he dies, which we'll get to in a moment.
I mean, all this stuff is sort of just getting to that moment, really. A series of things happen. One thing I thought was super interesting was that the Cyclops cracked the sort of their whole plan because of the White Knight, because of Dr. Manhattan's love for Angela spurs him into teleporting the dude away. Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't understand his powers, he just teleports him. He's alive in New Mexico. And that's how they realize that Dr. Manhattan is in Tulsa.
I also did not realize it was pronounced Gila Flats. I don't know if he was doing that wrong. I thought it was Gila Flats, but I guess not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it pronounced Gila Monster as well?
Definitely. That's for sure. what it is. One thing also I thought was weird is Keen bringing Lori to Tulsa still doesn't quite make sense, despite the fact that he calls it out in this plan.
Yeah. The thing that I was thought, one of the things that I thought was kind of fascinating about this show, as opposed to Watchmen, the comic book, and Damon Lindelof is cop to this, is they wanted to make sure there was a clear villain. Like, there's no clear villain in Watchmen, the comic book. Everybody is a mix of a bunch of different things. Here, Keen Jr. is a villain. He's giving a villain speech. They are racists. There is nothing good about them. Yeah. They are definitely the antagonists. I think we could certainly argue about Lady True, and I would like to talk about Lady True and her plan a little bit when we get to that, but they're bad guys through and through, and so all of their stuff is, like he says, half-baked. He wants to bring Lori Blake there to gloat. He wants an audience. He puts Dr. Manhattan in a cage. This is exactly what they have been doing the entire time throughout history, and as we've seen in the TV show, is they're just being evil fucking racists and going with their every impulse to destroy black people and make them prostrate in front of them. They take, even though he's a blue man, they take a black man, throw him in a cage, and mock him the entire time. It's horrific to watch.
Yeah. I mean, they then are fully punished, which was great to have it happen so quickly. Keen also gets into the chamber. Go ahead.
Blue's reaction to them, like, dying is really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, like, so they he gets in the chamber. Angela's like, hey, dude, don't do that. I think you don't understand what's happening. He's like, I think I got this. And
she's like, nice panties. That was awesome.
Yeah. And now Angela breaks a dude's fingers, one of the final remaining 7th Cavalry people, to find out where Dr. Manhattan is. We get shots of her literally shooting people in the head as she runs in there, guns a-blazing.
Hell yeah.
And she tries a couple of different techniques. She, like you said, she tries to appeal to Joe Keen Jr. and say, like, listen, this is all Lady True's plan. She let you steal these batteries. This is all part of this. Don't do this. And then he says something like, why would I listen to a black bitch? And Regina King's expression in that moment is amazing, where she just turns from, like, I'm appealing to you, I'm appealing to your best nature, to be like, oh, fuck you, dude. I'm going to fucking kill you. Incredible. Like, the fact that this show is so confident in their actors to let them act, to let them feel the moment, is one of the things that has made it so special across the board.
Yeah. And we get Keen gets gooed. He gets gooed right away. Yeah. True shows up. She doesn't expect to see Angela there, which I thought was interesting. And she has magnets, gun magnets, which is a cool little comic book thing. She opens the gate. We get True then kills all the Cyclops people. And
there's a couple of things there. So she teleports everybody into the town square, including the setup of the church that we saw from the very first episode that 7th Cavalry was filming in. She teleports them near the Dr. Manhattan phone booth, the ones that she has set up to have people falsely call God. So I think that's important to note. The cage is there. Angela is there. Everybody's ears are ringing, very similar to the squid explosion back in Times Square in 1985. So I think it's safe to say she's using the same teleportation equipment that Adrian Veidt developed back in the day. So even though she's pushing things forward, she's really extrapolating and following up on what her father has done. Wade vomits for the first time. Very funny running joke. Just him vomiting. It reminded me, not to call out another franchise, but there's a funny running joke with John Diggle in the Arrowverse stuff, where every time the Flash brings him somewhere, the Flash speeds him and he just turns and vomits every single time. And it pleasantly reminded me of that. But Wade vomits, and Lady True very mockingly is like, oh, where's Joe Keen? Where is he? He didn't go into the chamber, did he? Oh, let's just go over there and own that up. And he's been completely melted. He blorps all over the place. Lori freaks out and I think smashes his skull or something like that, whatever has been left. But Lady True explains that if you don't filter the nuclear energy, it'll pop you like a grape every time. So everybody who is asking, how can the 7th Cavalry do this? How would they have the equipment to do this stuff? How would they have the know-how? First of all, they didn't. And second of all, it was all Lady True feeding them some information the entire time.
Yeah, and I love how Angela just rolls up and is like, hey, you're using all of her shit. You're stupid. Just from 1 second, she sees how flawed their plan
yeah,
is.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's like there's so much going on, and then when you stop and you look, there's literally True labels over everything they have.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hold on a sec.
Yeah.
But again, short-sighted racists. Yeah. And that's and a Lady True dispenses with them in that fashion, like, you're not even worth my time to talk to now, and teleports
well,
them to...
they were like... you know, hey, enough with this speech. You're going to kill us, aren't you? And she's like, oh, you're going to die. Like, that was a fun moment. Of
yeah, the important thing to note there, though, is this also explains what the deal was between Will Reeves and Lady True. The deal was that Will Reeves gave up the information of who Dr. Manhattan was so that she could complete her plan to become Dr. Manhattan. And in exchange, she would do what the Minutemen never did back in the day, which is take care of Cyclops for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have all of the Cyclops senior leadership are here to watch Joaquin Jr. become Dr. Manhattan. So she, I don't think she teleported them. I think she disintegrated them. Like they're dead. And that means she got rid of racism. There's no more racism in the world. So it's done. So that's a very positive result.
That's a positive result to this moment.
I got to say, though, like the. When the old guy made that kind of like Cyclops symbol, that was crazy. Specifically because like on Twitter when I was like after I watched this thing there were a bunch of like people doing that white supremacy I was just like oh my god it bothers me so much that it's still a thing but like then when they all disappeared and you had like the wheelchair like move a little bit I thought that was like also very powerful and cool
the wheelchair. I thought you were talking about Will Reeves' chair. So I think they got all disintegrated. She does kill them. And then she moves on to the next part of her plan, which is to become Dr. Manhattan. The giant floating ball is over her. First they need to suck Dr. Manhattan powers. That's important to mention.
Well, and actually before that, Dr. Manhattan teleports the heroes away using the goo to teleport them. And that was just like a sort of the most superhero movie or Avengers-esque moment, which despite the fact that they're sort of subverting the superhero genre, they're also honoring it a little moment here.
This is this episode as a whole. I love this episode. This, to me, was, relatively speaking, the most straightforward episode, just in terms of feeling like a superhero movie, to your point, Justin, feeling like they needed to finish up the plot. They were jamming through the plot. It's not like the sixth episode where they're marinating in this idea of racism and inherited trauma in the history of America. There's certainly notes of that throughout, and there are visual things that bring it all back that we'll talk about in a moment. But it almost forewent a lot of the thematic text in favor of finishing up the plot in this episode, I felt like.
Yeah.
Which was okay.
Yeah, it has to get to the... You have to finish the story at some point.
I would like to say there was a funny line here where Lori was like, oh shit, am I dead, when she saw Vite. That was kind of a cool moment.
That was funny, yeah. But yeah, like, it's mostly just... We get this great moment where Dr. Manhattan, as he's dying, I'm in every moment that we were together all at once.
Oh, that's where I got choked up.
I got choked up. I feel like they give you enough sort of... I don't know, like you sort of feel like he might survive and then he dies. And I thought that was just really well played.
Yeah. I also love them letting him be Cal once before the end.
Exactly,
I thought that was very sweet, very sad. That's certainly a callback to that incredible line from the eighth episode. This is the moment when he looks at Angela and reveals, yes, this is the moment when I fell in love with you and I fell in love with you at every moment. So this to me was the point where these flashback scenes, like I was talking about earlier, started to work for me because they started to feel like they were tied to Dr. Manhattan and the Dr. Manhattan of all versus just being a editing device that is used in TV and movies.
I feel like they set it up because of nostalgia, because so much of the show and the great episodes of the show are about sort of pieces from history falling mm-hmm. together.
I think you're both right.
Whoa, oh, that's thanks, even Pete. Crazier.
Wow. You know who's changed the most over the course of the show? You, Pete.
I was going to say you're peeing, but I guess we don't know that for sure.
Yeah, thanks for checking it out, by the way. I appreciate
it.
Hey,
I'm always happy to take a look. You got to wake that thing up.
Yes.
So we reveal the Vite's plan. He wants to freeze the squid and rain it down on Lady True's plan. They basically go and do that.
They do. There were two points in this episode with Vite in particular that I was super stressed out. And one of them was the rocket ship, where I was like, just go to the rocket ship. Why are you taking so long? Just go to the rocket ship. Stop walking slowly. Run to the rocket ship. And where I thought maybe he wasn't going to get off. The second part was when he was shitting on Wade the entire time in Karnak, and they need to stop this thing. Wade is looking around. He realizes this is where they sent the squid from, that this was Vite's whole plan. And again, it was very stressful to watch that, because it felt like maybe Wade is going to screw this up. Maybe Wade is going to be like, no, I'm not going to do that. You're the guy that ruined my life. And ultimately,
it was very Rorschach, moment.
I was stressed out when Dr. Manhattan was saying to Angela, like, hey, step back. And then when Angela's on the phone and they're telling Lori's like, run. And she's not moving. That was very stressful to me.
Well, we should also mention, so when Dr. Manhattan explodes and exudes this energy right before True does it, Angela is blown backwards, exactly how Hooded Justice was thrown through the window back in the day. So again, we get a visual riff there before she ultimately hits her head on the Dr. Manhattan booth and falls unconscious. Meanwhile, they're in Karnak coming up this plan to make a squid rain.
Squid rain.
Yep.
You guys are awful.
And he says that it's going to
it's fall. Nothing sacred.
He says it's going to fall on Telsa like a Gatling gun and obliterate everything in the area, specifically that the squids, the way that he created them, wouldn't hurt anybody. So he turns them into a weapon once again. So we do get a rerun. We do see squids destroying thing. But it also, as it starts to rain down on Telsa, is sound-wise and visually exactly like the Gatling gun that was on the airplane that attacked during the Tulsa massacre back in the first episode.
Yeah, Gatling gun, the most racist of guns.
Yes.
True. That's true.
Never hang out with a Gatling gun. It's very uncomfortable to drink with.
Noted racist Dave Gatling invented that gun.
But I appreciated that. Like, that's one of the things that I really liked about this episode as well, is they did figure out a way to bring it back that riffed on the first episode without explicitly being the first episode once again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as we go through, the Lady True gets a bunch of holes put in her. It seems like everybody's dying, but
she gets stigmata with Lady True. Yeah. She does become Tekka God very briefly, though she doesn't get the Dr. Manhattan powers. We also see the cross in the background says, praise waiteth for no man. And as the giant ball falls on her and crushes her, she in Vietnamese says, motherfucker. Jesus also falls down at the same time. So God is dead at this
God
point, I think, fair to say. And then Angela makes a run for it, which I thought was
finally
interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing. She dodged those dancing between the raindrops there. Right. She escapes. She runs to the theater and meets up with Will, who is there with the kids.
And this is hiding safely in the dreamland, just like he talks about. This is what Will did back in the first episode.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, it's almost a reverse of what he did in a way, because he started in the Dreamland Theater watching the Bass Reeves movie with his mom, who was playing the piano, and then they ran out of there to escape from the Tulsa massacre. Angela's doing the opposite. She is running into it to join back to her grandfather. Now, this is the thing that I wanted to talk about earlier, because we start to get more flashbacks here. And I think two things are going on. One is that Angela is accepting her legacy. That's why I think we spend so much time on the scene. Her hanging out with Will is she has ran away from her history her entire life. It's been taken away from her. This is her accepting it. This is finally her getting her family back, getting her history back, owning her trauma and figuring out a way to move forward, even though the love of her life is dead. And then the second thing is, well, I'll talk about the second thing in a second, because I think it's more appropriate to talk about it in a moment. But they have a very quiet conversation there in the Dreamland Theater, talking about everything that's happened. And this
but
is
we
the
also,
second. Yeah,
we also get to see where Dr. Manhattan sent the kids, because I was worried about that. Like, he vanished them away, and then this is where they ended up.
Yeah, he said that last episode. He said, I sent them to the theater to hang out with your dad.
Yeah, I know, but saying that, I was like, in what time, when are they at, you know what I mean? Like, it was a lot, like, sure, you said that, but I, you know, it was nice to see that they were okay.
Maybe at dinosaur times or something?
Yo, who the fuck knows, man?
It's hard to tell. He's all over the place. We get to a great conversation. Will talks about his origin, the mask, the line, and I hope I have this one correct. You can't heal things with a mask. Wounds need air to heal.
Yeah, the wounds need air to heal was such a powerful line.
No, the actual line was wounds need bears to heal.
Man, I got to fix my speakers or something.
Zalvin, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. A bear can, like, lick your wounds a little bit.
That's true.
Whenever I get a little cut on my toesies, I go into the woods and a bear licks my wounds.
No, man. Ask Archie Andrews. Bears don't heal. They make them.
And we talked about this earlier that Will says, you know, Dr. Manhattan. Oh, this is later. Will says Dr. Manhattan could have done a little bit more, which I think is a little sort of insensitive to his granddaughter who lost the love of her life.
Yeah, Angela's reactions throughout this end sequence are kind of fascinating. She does let herself crumble. She lets herself cry and feel it after her conversation with Will in the theater where they're sitting there. But after that, she almost seems numb a lot of the episode. I want to throw something out at you. So this is very
Watch yourself jumping to
the end of the episode, but there's certainly an implication that potentially Angela gets some sort of Dr. Manhattan powers at the end.
Right. Yeah.
My feeling was that we're almost seeing that throughout a lot of this end sequence, and certainly it's meant to be ambiguous at the end, but her seeing her memories of what happened is very similar visually to the way that we saw Dr. Manhattan living through his memories in the previous episode. Her being relatively numb, but not completely numb to her feeling, also very similar to Dr. Manhattan. So my take on it is that starting with the sequence, that's almost, she's already become this. She's become this Angela Manhattan, if you will. And at least they're seeding in the idea that that is possible.
Yeah. Which is, I guess we'll talk about that in the other podcast, but which is exciting and surprising at the same time.
Yes. Back at Karnak, meanwhile, we get to see what's going on with everybody else. They go into a hangar. We get to see Archie, which is great.
Oh, yeah, that was a great moment.
Very cool. And Lori wants to arrest Vite.
We should also mention, though, I appreciated the fact that they, like, filled in the blanks a little bit, because we've assumed that the cops got their technology from Dan Dreiberg, from Night Owl, but they pretty explicitly state that. And then we get the moment with Lori wanting to arrest Vite. And I read this moment. So he laughs and then he huffs himself up and becomes the old Adrian Vite and says, who do you think you are to hold judgment over me? I almost wanted her to say, I'm glad she did it, but I almost wanted her to say, I'm the girl with the motherfucking brick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been badass.
Yes.
But I also like him saying, like, the world is going to end. And then she's like, people keep saying that, but it never does. And I really love that. That was a great line.
Well, I think that's also a riff on the nothing ever ends Adrian. And I think that's ultimately the thing that pisses him off is he hates that. Like, he wants endings. He wants the adulation and for him to be done. And he's never getting that.
He's a character. He's a villain in a story. And so he wants it to end so he can then move on or become he thinks he's the hero of a story. And the world, as Lori says, the world is just not like that, you idiot. We keep on living. And people change, and she says, some of us do. And then we get the Rorschach analog finally beats Vite by knocking him out.
A little wrench to the head solves a lot of problems.
not a great solution. Don't take any lesson from that, Pete.
I thought that was great. And I loved, which again, I'm sure we'll talk about that on the Buddhist podcast, but I loved Lori and Wade going off into Archie together, dragging Veidt behind them. Mm-hmm. It almost felt to me like Lori has been Silk Spectre. She's been the comedian. Now she kind of gets to be Night Owl to Wade's Rorschach. And potentially that's something we'll see going forward. That's just a fun pairing and a fun possibility to me.
I would like to say, though, his line, the way he delivers, he talks too much and kind of like a southern draw, was really hysterical and fantastic.
Yeah. His voice throughout the whole series is just so different from everyone else's, and it's great.
Yeah, and it's also cathartic for Wade because he has been traumatized by the squid. Now he gets to have vengeance on Adrian Veidt.
Hell yeah.
So back in to sort of the little epilogue here, Dreamland, in the Dreamland Theater, the letters spelled Dr. M, which I thought was cool, interesting. Red Scare somehow lives, as does Bean.
And Pirate Jenny, and all of their masks are off now. So again, we get a resolution.
All secrets are out.
All secrets are out.
Angela takes the kids to her bakery, her secret headquarters. Topher sees her
suit. What a Beautiful
suit.
Morning is playing.
Yeah, it's like sort of like the truth is out, and aren't we all a little bit better for that? And then we get the final sequence leading up that we talked about.
Yeah, hold on. I do want to talk about the Topher thing because we've had so many theories about him.
Yeah.
He sees the costume. Two things it reminded me of. One, it's sort of like Lori looking at the costume in the Owl Cave back in the comic book. But it also reminded me of the moment when Angela's father is dressed up and seeing his father dressed as Hooded Justice.
Yeah.
But it almost seems more positive. Like, we've speculated, does Topher have Dr. Manhattan powers? Is there something weirder going on with him? But ultimately, I think his point is to more positively embrace the legacy that his mother, Angela, is giving him.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely was like, it was sort of a shot in like a hero pose way. Like it felt like this is my lineage. This is my legacy. I can take this on someday, maybe.
And it was also kind of like when Angela was a girl and saw the VHS tape.
Yeah.
Of Sister Night.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a similar expression, I guess. Good point, Pete.
Nice.
Yeah, put down the wrench. You can put down the wrench, Pete.
Aw.
Yeah, well, you should not have that unless you're doing some serious plumbing. She sees we get a flashback to the eggs. She sees the egg in the carton. She walks out to the pool.
Whoa. Yeah, like the whole thing about, you know, Louis Gottschalk Jr. was like, hey, you know, you got to break a couple eggs or whatever.
He
wanted me to say that. And that reminded me when he was like, hey, I'm walking on water. This is important. And I was like, wait, what the fuck? And she doesn't get it. But then when she goes back to her house and sees the eggs that he was trying to make waffles before he died or before he got sucked away, I really loved this whole thing.
Yeah, it definitely brings everything together. I mean, parse through the half sentences that Pete just said. So back in the last episode, Dr.
Fuck
Manhattan,
you, I talk in half sentences, you dick.
All right. Put down the wrench. Dr. Manhattan was walking out of pool. Angela was like, get off the fucking pool. And he was like, no, it's important that you see this for later, which is how it ties into the end of the episode. Also, Angela broke the eggs, as Justin mentioned. Turns out there's one egg left. And Will, back in the Dreamland Theater, mentioned in order to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. That's what Dr. Manhattan said to me. We also should mention an important plot point is that Will was not the villain here. Like, there was certainly a point through Lady True's plan where it felt like, why did Will give up Dr. Manhattan? And what Will reveals is when Dr. Manhattan visited him at Nelson Gardner's house, he laid out all of this. And he said, in order to beat Lady True, you need to give me up. I need to die. Which is an interesting thing, because if Dr. Manhattan is dead, how does he know that?
Right.
And the reason I ask is because, as I think has been pretty clearly established by Watchmen, he is not omniscient. He can't see everything. He can only see in his own timeline and what is happening to him. But he seems to be able to see things that are happening beyond his timeline.
Well, I think when he gets to a certain point and there's no more, I think that's when he just says, okay, this must be when I die because I can't go any farther than this.
I think
Not be dead. We don't know. Like, we don't know how the Dr. Manhattan powers work. If Angela truly inherited them through the egg, like, we don't know what that means in general. Maybe Dr. Also, Manhattan is infinite.
But also comes back to the whole, which came first, the chicken or the egg, which this show answers. It's the fucking egg.
What if Dr. Manhattan was like, go eat this chicken. Eat this chicken whole.
Yeah.
Inherit my powers.
It's a fucking egg. So now we know the answer. People can stop with the stupid bullshit.
I'm just saying that chicken and waffles is pretty delicious. So he could have done like a little 50-50 thing going on there.
Yeah, make it a meal rather than a raw egg. That's gross.
Yeah, that is gross. She's probably, do you think, this is the big question coming out of the series, and we'll get to the specific moment in a second. Do you think Angela died of salmonella poisoning?
Yes, that's what he said. It's important.
If Rocky
can do it, you can do it.
I want to watch you writhe in fucking pain.
He was like, you have to be by the pool so you can barf in it because you're going to be sick.
Don't eat raw eggs. That's the motto of Watchmen. So she does walk out. They bathe the entire thing. It's early morning. They bathe the entire thing in blue light as Angela walks out to the pool. She cracks open to the egg, eats the egg.
I was hoping it would be hard-boiled at least. You know, I mean, that's gross.
It is gross. And she goes and slowly we get the shot of her putting her foot down on the pool as See How They Fly plays on the soundtrack. And that's where we cut. And this shot was perfect.
Perfect.
Absolutely perfect.
What a great end.
Nope.
Now, I'm surprised. Pete,
if she didn't take her fucking time, we could have had more time to see if she actually was able to walk. But because she was taking her fucking time too much, it cut out.
That's not how storytelling works, Pete.
Pete, I just want to say, not to be too Adrian Veidt about it, you're about to eat your fucking words here, because the reason we cut out on that scene is it is an exact parallel of the last panel of Watchmen the comic book. In Watchmen the comic book, it ends with Rorschach's journal being in the New Frontiersman. It's laid out there. They're looking for something to publish, and the publisher's like, I don't know, take something off of the crazy pile, grab whatever you want. Rorschach's journal has the whole plan about Adrian Veidt and the squid and everything in it. And after Adrian Veidt is ostensibly won, we think the world is never going to find out. And the intern or assistant or whoever he is reaching for the book. And the last line is, I leave it entirely in your hands. And we left on this ambiguous moment where we don't know whether the guy is going to reach and grab with his hand Rorschach's journal and take it out and publish it or not. Ultimately, in the TV series, we find out that, yes, he did. That's what they said. But this ends on the exact same thing, where it's an ambiguous moment, but instead of a hand, it's a foot. Perfect.
Yeah. So let me get this straight.
The foot is the downstairs
words,
hand.
You ate your fucking words, Pete.
No, I did not, you fucking piece of shit.
Chop it down on him.
So just because we have one shitty Tony Soprano ending, we got to have two?
Oh, my God.
That's what you're pointing
out? Ridiculous.
Pete, your words are like a raw egg and you ate them, and the only superpowers you got were being wrong.
Well, then I'm wrong twice, and I don't give a shit because it would have been nice to see her fucking walk on water.
Well, that's a cliffhanger, Pete. Have you ever read a comic book?
Eggman playing during the credits was a nice touch.
Yeah.
You are 100% wrong. That's the only way it could end. And I think it was pretty clear from the moment she walked in to the kitchen.
That's your shitty opinion.
I agree with Alex.
I think maybe wait for season two or use your imagination.
Right. I understand. Normally I'd be like, that's an opinion, but I kind of feel like this is a fact here.
Yes.
I don't care about your facts and your bullshit.
Man. Wow. You're pretty angry, Pete. I think this is a horrible point to wrap up, but before we do, and before we get to our bonus podcast, which we'll post on Thursday, any final thoughts about this episode that you want to throw out there or the season?
Great cap to a great season. I'm very excited to talk more about what the future holds. A lot of ideas. Just truly a masterpiece. Lived up to the potential that this show had and sort of went beyond.
Yeah, I'm so happy this episode just kind of like ramped up and got through all the things and was able to tie stuff up the way that it did, so that like before the other episodes were more artistic and a little bit more kind of like I feel like creative, where this one felt like just thing after thing, we got to get through this a little bit. And that's why I think the ending bothered me, because it was like hammering through stuff and then it slowed down and stopped, like really slowed down to almost a crawl and then stopped like seconds before, you know, with something like really cool. So yeah, that was just a little, but then for me having that egg song play and then you kind of realize, okay, this had to end this way. And this was kind of like, of course the egg worked because of all the things, that we saw and witnessed before. So it was just like, I don't know. It was very powerful.
I sort of agree with you a little bit, Pete, just in terms of clearly like the sixth episode was a high watermark in terms of visual creativity. The eighth episode played with time. Seventh episode also mixed up the history and tried some visual things. I think there were some fantastic things throughout, but it definitely, by its very nature, erred on the side of plot. But I also think that's true to the last issue of the comic book, where
all stories, I feel like, sort of have to do that.
Yes. And also it's true to the comic book in terms of that simmers down a little bit for the last couple of pages and just gives us this epilogue of what happened to all the characters. But since this show was all about one character, Angela Abar, that's the main one that we focus on. And that's why it ultimately worked for me, though I do understand a bit of the sense of what you're talking about. One other thing that I think is worth mentioning, or at least ask the question, is how did you feel about the treatment of Lady True, just on the thematic sense? Turning her into a petulant villain for the last episode, one quibble that I had is I think the show did a great job talking about the African-American experience, talking about inherited trauma, but through Angela Abar and other characters, but focusing on Angela. But if Lady True is about the Vietnamese experience, at the end, they ultimately get fucked by God again, which I understand is consistent, but it didn't necessarily bother me so much as raise the question there of, I'm curious to see how the Vietnamese audience will react to that at the end of the day.
To me, it was less that she was representing the Vietnamese experience and more she was the sort of the heightened or the new version of Adrian Veidt. Mm-hmm. So I think that makes sense as that story, like over her arc is very Veidt-like in the heightened way.
But we also don't know like what she would have done, like if she would have really changed things and made things better, mm-hmm. like she had said. So,
yeah, I think she probably would. If I had Dr. Manhattan powers, I'd do a lot of great stuff. I definitely get rid of the stuff that behind my Alexander the Great and horrible, no good, very bad day painting. Probably eat some other things, but I'll start there.
Go eat a raw egg out of your fridge, Alex, and make it happen.
Yeah.
If you would like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by. We'll chat with you about Watchmen. Couple of places socially you can follow us on Twitter, WatchmenWatch1. Definitely hit us up with questions there for the bonus podcast. We love to hear your theories about a potential season 2 when that almost assuredly gets announced. Also, WatchmenWatch podcast on Instagram and Facebook. You can check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. You can subscribe and comment on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. And remember, we taped this podcast 35 minutes ago. Squid rain.
Squid rain. That sounds like the peen alarm clock is going off.
Ooh, Pete, put down the wrench.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.